Welcome back to the Electronic Intifada podcast. I'm Nora Barrows Friedman. A new campaign that launched in California aims to hold U.S. lawmakers accountable for making federal taxpayers complicit in the genocide in Gaza. The campaign, Taxpayers Against Genocide, or TAG, began with 500 Northern California organizers and expanded to nearly 2,000 in recent weeks. TAG is further expanding its membership to include all U.S. federal taxpayers across the country as it seeks justice, and the group recently announced plans to file a report with the United Nations Human Rights Council in April to explore other international legal remedies. Joining us to talk about this campaign and how people around the U.S. can get involved and become part of the lawsuits are four members of Taxpayers Against Genocide's founding and organizing team, Seth Donnelly, Maria Barakat, Hannah Barakat, and Mary Sampson. Seth Donnelly was a Bay Area public high school teacher and is a longtime advocate for human rights. He's been active with the Haiti Action Committee and is one of the founders of Taxpayers Against Genocide. Maria Barakat is a Lebanese-Palestinian anti-war activist, sociologist of law and society, and public policy expert specializing in equity from UC Berkeley. Maria is part of TAG's core organizing team and is one of the original plaintiffs. Hannah Barakat is a Lebanese-Palestinian musician and a longtime human rights activist involved in the movement for the liberation of Palestine. And Mary Sampson is a Bay Area-based Palestine rights activist and is part of TAG's press team. She's a former member of the International Solidarity Movement, having joined their efforts in the West Bank during the Second Intifada. Thank you all for being with us today on the Electronic Intifada podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Nora.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Let's start by talking about what Taxpayers Against Genocide is and why you all came together to launch this campaign.
Well, Taxpayers Against Genocide started in Northern California. A group of folks who had been protesting together, petitioning local government together for months in the Northern California area came together and decided that we had to get to the source of what we were protesting, which was bombs for Israel. And the source is our money. The source is our tax dollars that pay for the weapons. And there are people, individuals in power who make the decisions to allocate those resources, those federal tax dollars, in order to pay for these weapons. And so we understood that going directly to our representatives, which we'd already been doing all for the last 16 months, we've been petitioning and emailing and hosting protests, but going directly to the federal court district here in Northern California to hold them legally accountable, because genocide is illegal. And so allocating tax dollars as well is illegal. We wanted to hold them, you know, accountable in that area, in that legal arena. And also, we were able to expand our movement so fast, so exponentially over this work, that we can really see that the will in the public to hold elected officials accountable for their actions, for their criminal actions, and the misuse of our tax dollars is strong and it's growing. And when people hear about this, they want to do something.
Yeah, Seth. Can you talk about how it's laid out? There are hundreds and hundreds, thousands of federal and state lawmakers around the country. How have you identified which ones should be named in lawsuits, and kind of the process around trying to assemble these kinds of legal complaints?
Absolutely. So as Maria was saying, you know, people just all across the country, we had already gone through a process of months and months of trying to, you know, reach out to these Congress folks and say, you know, stop using our tax dollars as such. You know, some of my high school students met in person with Mike Thompson last January, actually a year ago, you know, right after the ICJ ruling, and they said, please stop this on behalf of, you know, and on behalf of our families, our parents' tax dollars, and the officials dismissed. So in terms of which officials we targeted, it was those congresspersons because Congress has power of the purse, they control the appropriations and the allocation process. So we wanted to go to the source of the federal income tax dollars that are being used for military aid to Israel. And so we looked at those congresspersons who cast a vote on in the House on April 20th, 2024, which was to re-up $26.38 billion more in military aid and weapon sales to Israel at that time. And that was already, as you know, as the listeners and viewers know, of Electronic Intifada, that by then the evidence of genocide was overwhelming. And they had, we had lobbied them extensively not to do that. So they did it anyway. So it was those reps in the House that voted for that aid package. And likewise in the Senate, 3 days later, the Senate passed, they combined it into a larger omnibus package, but for Ukraine, Taiwan, and but they included the $26.38 billion military aid to Israel. So we identified both our senators in California, as well as the reps within the 18 counties that are covered under the same U.S. federal court district of Northern California and San Francisco. And so we organized the class all up and down those 18 counties. And that's how it grew to 2,000. And that's how it grew to name Nancy Pelosi, not just our reps up here in the north, which are Mike Thompson, Jared Huffman, the original defendants, but also all these other reps in the greater Bay Area, including Jimmy Panetta down in Santa Cruz.
And Hannah, as an activist, you know, I think people have been protesting, people have been expanding the boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaigns where they can. People have been calling their representatives, voicing their opposition to the continued funding of the genocide, even as there's, you know, a very kind of tenuous ceasefire as we're speaking right now. What is the difference between doing those acts of protest and civil disobedience and organizing a campaign like this? How have you as an activist been able to move this campaign further through legal action?
I feel like at this point, all of the processes that we've taken to get up to this point as activists for Palestine has brought us to newer tactics. I mean, we used everything that we thought was appropriate to do, protesting, calling and emailing our representatives. All of those things are the steps that we thought were going to be able to get us to a solution. And when we realized that the legal system is really built not to assist us, and not, you know, it's working against us in so many ways, to the point that now we have to move to an international arena because the United States legal system is failing us. So I think it's taken a lot of different facets of people's protests in different ways to get us to this point. And I know for me, I've tried a lot of different things, and Taxpayers Against Genocide feels like the strongest and most powerful movement that I can be a part of right now to actually make a difference.
Yeah. And Mary, I wanted to bring you in as well, as someone who's also been involved for a long time with the movement for the liberation of Palestine, and as part of someone who's on the press team. How have the optics been in terms of trying to hold these elected officials, these lawmakers accountable? And how is Taxpayers Against Genocide aiming to hold them accountable in terms of how it's perceived, how this campaign kind of moves through the media? I mean, how has the reaction been so far, by these lawmakers that you're identifying, but also in the local and national media?
Well, the U.S. officials that are responsible for spending our money this way are never going to cop to that. And that's what we found, which is why we've had to expand the case. In terms of you know, what we're getting back from press-wise. I mean, I think within the first month of the original lawsuit, we had people like Saul Williams. Seth was on Democracy Now. There was a lot of really good response. I think what has happened is Trump coming in, there's another level of stuff going on. And now that we are going international, we have a really strong story. So we're going to start pushing out the new narrative. And you're kind of the first person that we've talked to since our press conference last week. So.
Yeah, and talk about the press conference. What are the new additions to these lawsuits that you've laid out? How is this campaign expanding? And Seth, maybe you want to respond to that first.
Sure. And also just add to, as part of the expansion, that we ran into the same roadblocks that the class action against Biden for genocide that the Center for Constitutional Rights filed, and actually the Corey versus Caterpillar class action from way back in the day. What the federal court system here is established in our area, and it used the Corey versus Caterpillar precedent, is that by us as taxpayers saying we don't want our tax dollars to be used to fund genocide, and moreover, that's illegal, which it clearly is across the board. It violates the Constitution, it violates international law, et cetera, and it violates existing federal laws like the Leahy Amendment. By us doing that, the court said that we're presenting them with a non-judiciable political question, which is exactly what they said when they denied relief to the Corys and to the Palestinians who were killed by the Caterpillar bulldozers when the IDF was driving them. And it's what they said with the Biden lawsuit, when Palestinian families in both in diaspora and in Palestine sued Biden over genocide. And the court said, well, there's plausible evidence of genocide, but we can't do anything about it because it's a political question. We disagree with that very strongly in all those cases. We think that there's nothing political that we're asking the court to do other than defend the most basic human rights, which is their duty as a judicial branch. But as Hannah said, it's somewhat predictable. We went into this with our eyes wide open. We fought in the federal court system to win. We always took our case seriously. This was not a stunt. We had an incredible argument. And but when we were dismissed on those grounds, with this momentum and these 2,000 people and all of, we had been building a movement from the beginning at a grassroots level. We were like, and it was spreading across the country. We did a webinar that drew hundreds of people across the United States. So that's when we were like, we really need to keep escalating our tactics. And so in synergy with what, say, Don is doing, Don had an amazing press conference this morning where they're filing an action against the Biden administration for genocide before the ICC. We're carrying out this action with the UN Human Rights Council in April, and all hands on deck. And we hope that it further isolates the U.S. government on an international scale, including our congresspersons, for complicity in genocide.
Yeah. And with that, I mean, have you been actually in court during these proceedings? Have you been able to make these appeals to the federal judges, or has it been kind of more of an obscured kind of process that you get the appeal back on paper after a judge has looked at it? Have you actually been able to be there physically?
No, it's the answer. We filed it. One of the more gratifying moments on our end was when Representative Mike Thompson and Representative Jerry Huffman, the original defendants, were served in D.C. on Christmas Eve. But the judge, Vince Chabria, who was assigned to our case, never allowed our case to move to an actual hearing. He asked us to further show cause, which we did in good faith. And then he responded by saying, per Corey versus Caterpillar, I'm shutting this case down.
Wow. Maria, what has and you've been appealing these decisions. What has that process been like? And you're also working with organizations like the National Lawyers Guild. Can you talk a little bit about that the process of filing these appeals and kind of expanding this to a more like national grassroots movement?
Yeah, so there's multiple parts there. So from the start, we've been building a legal framework that can be adapted to different jurisdictions around the country. That's part of what our webinar did that had over 40 different states represented in that webinar from over, I think, 1,500 registrants. So the idea has been that we have a extremely solid legal case that the National Lawyers Guild and other attorneys who have experience in this at the federal and international court level have all worked on it, supported it, and you know, told us how strong this case is. So in that sense, we have our approach that we hope can just be applicable and templated. And that is extraordinarily useful still to ensure that our representatives never forget that they have been complicit in genocide and that we will not stop until they are shamed in the world, in the world's eyes. So we have, as of now, decided not to formally appeal this judge's case, ruling that dismissed our case, because we feel that they're going to continue to fall back on this political question argument that we believe is faulty and honestly on its face. When you read our legal arguments and then read the judge's dismissal documents, you can see that it is, you know, almost a not in good faith argument that he's making, because it does not take into account any of the evidence that we provided. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a lot to be said for how the system responds to the people organizing to confront its failures or its intended purpose of harm in certain cases. So what we're seeing is that as we continue to build powerful legal arguments that would hold, that I think that in this instance that we faced what many folks are going to face is that the system upholds itself. It prevents the people from having access inside that building before it even starts. And I think that there's a lot of political reasons why that happens. And ironically, we're talking about how we're being excluded because this is a political issue. It's not a political issue. It's a legal issue. But the politics inside of our federal court systems are well known. I mean, I don't think that it's I don't think that you can argue that our court systems and the people who inhabit them are connected and very deeply invested in maintaining the way things are today. Our representatives and our legal officials are all connected as well. Many of our representatives are attorneys in their former lives, et cetera. And they all sit at the same tables together. So that's what we're seeing. We have a strong case. We have a massive base, and I think other folks are going to take this up. Actually, we already have one in Minnesota. We have a taxpayers against genocide director, essentially, in Minnesota that has just established and they're filing their case. So that's just one example. You know, we know that the U.S. In its federal and state court systems are going to resist, but we will hold them accountable in whatever ways we can. And so that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
On that, Nora, another factor is with the appeal is that for us, it goes to the Ninth Circuit Court. And that's the exact same circuit court that denied the Biden case. And it so we don't want to further. Our concern is that the writing's on the wall there. We had initially hoped we might get a federal judge that was remotely willing to pay attention to the Constitution and international law in a more forthright manner. But we don't want to entrench that precedent while others across the country, like New York or Minnesota, are working on their lawsuits. They might actually have a different judge at a district level and learn from what happened to us while we're going international.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So what are these lawsuits asking the courts to do specifically? What kind of accountability are you asking for from these lawmakers? What could happen if one or all of these lawsuits are upheld and in the courts, and they find that your case has merit, and these lawmakers are held accountable? What does accountable mean? What could it actually materially mean for these lawmakers who have approved over and over and over again the weapon sales to Israel to carry out genocide, not just in the last 16 months, but over, you know, the last eight decades? What could actually happen with these lawsuits?
Seth, I could speak to two pieces and then offer you one. So speaking as not just a person of conscience, but a Lebanese and Palestinian person, one of many who are involved in our, were involved in our case, we have been seeking accountability from the court to declare that these representatives have facilitated this genocide against our own people. That declaratory measure there is critical to having it on the record that the United States funded this genocide. The other piece is that in our argument, we argued that we had experienced, damages. So this is a class action lawsuit, and we had hoped to describe in effective legal ways the harms that we faced. And in some cases, that's the loss of hundreds of members of our families, right? So we have been seeking repair, seeking accountability and repair. And any repair that we were seeking was going to be delivered to Palestinians in the form of aid. But yeah, and Seth, maybe you can speak to the third legal.
Yeah, absolutely. The declaratory relief, we wanted to take the financial, and then like Maria was saying, just every penny would go to the people of Palestine. One of our plaintiffs, Mama Ganoush, 211 family members, and Mama Ganoush repeatedly went to Pelosi and said, and was just shined on by, that kind of. But we were also looking for injunctive relief, right? Where the court, when we expanded the lawsuit to name all congresspersons that voted to send the military aid, we also named Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, who's also being named in the Don case against with the ICC, because he was in charge of the disbursement of the tax dollars in the form of lethal weapons and military aid. And so we wanted the court, by declaring that this is unconstitutional, and that also put a halt to ongoing, because the aid is, obviously it's ongoing. It's not like they just get the $26 billion in one shot, And now we see Trump lifting the limit on 2,000-pound bombs. And, so we wanted a halt to that. And that's what we hope the other lawsuits elsewhere in the country fight it on, because some people say you can't sue your congressperson because they have immunity, but we don't. The Supreme Court has already established in some of its opinions that immunity is not absolute. It's not like they can just, hypothetically vote to reinstitute slavery and say that's just their legislative free speech, So we think this is important to fight on.
Yeah. And I meant to remark earlier, Dawn is DAWN, Democracy for the Arab World Now, an organization. So our listeners and viewers can look up their press conference that happened today. We're recording on February 24th. Mary, can you talk a little bit about the precedent that this campaign sets, not just for, it's obviously, it's very important for Palestine and the campaign for Palestinian rights, but kind of more broadly, if these lawsuits gain traction and continue expanding, what kind of precedent can this set for other human rights violations that our government continues to fund?
I think that there's a real education going on around how our tax dollars are being spent. And when you really see what we are spending on the military and what your portion of that is, it's a big eye opener for a lot of people. Like, we've known this for a long time, but pointing it out that it is illegal to use our tax dollars for these war crimes, is that is it. And everyone can identify with being a taxpayer, because most people are. So that is really the core of, you know, that's how this movement is has started and why it's got so much traction and why we've had so many people at the webinar and other states are calling us all the time. We want to do this too. It's powerful because it's about our tax dollars. So we're really confident that this is going to just keep taking off, and they can keep shying away from whatever, but the Constitution is the Constitution and that's the law. And that's what we're going to keep going for. And we have amazing people like Huwaito Raaf and ICJ who are willing to really help us.
That's great. And Hannah, can you talk a little bit more about the kinds of, I don't know, I mean, I would guess that, you know, as this campaign expands across the country, there's a lot of enthusiasm from activists who want to join and want to know, you know, like in Minnesota, how to start their own legal filings and proceedings. Can you talk a little bit about the grassroots component of all of this?
Yeah, definitely. Well, first, I want to say that we did hold a webinar on January 25th that was really informative. And I think that's something that's probably sparked the Minnesota group to kind of take the initial framework and start their own process in their own.
It's still available online.
And it is available.
We can link to it. Yeah.
Channel. If you'd like to go and see, there's a lot of really good information in there. You know, I think people all across the nation are feeling very helpless and want to find a way to do something that is tangible, that can make a change, and that can stop these heinous, horrific crimes that are occurring with using our tax dollars. So I think that people are, I don't know if excited is the right word, because it's still such a painful experience that a lot of people are going through right now.
Activated.
Yes. Mm. So I feel like people really are driven towards this process. And I think the more that they know about it, the more that they're going to want to get involved, because we're not going to stop.
Yeah.
If I can just add real quick, Nora, to you, it's what this, what TAG is about and what this movement against genocide has been about since October 7th. The wave of education, as Mary was saying, that has happened across the world, mm-hmm. and the young people who are now seeing with their own eyes what has been going on at the hands of US militarism and its allies, hands and weapons. And I think what this is about for TAG is about connection. This is about us having a home together in resistance across mm-hmm. the country. We're anchored in our personal responsibility to oppose genocide. We know that we are related to this genocide, whether we are Palestinian or not, because our tax dollars fund it and fuel it. And then our representatives who walk around every day having donuts with constituents in coffee shops, talking about all kinds of things, they get to go and then sleep at night while the rest of us are having nightmares about children's body parts flying off, which has happened to all of us all year. So this is a movement about connection, where we are connecting to different grassroots efforts around the country. We're partnering. Yeah. We are going hand in hand to whatever, you know, international or national legal efforts that we can do to hold accountability. And we understand deeply what this genocide has exposed. And I mean, all your EI listeners know very well that the project of genocide in Palestine is a colonial imperial project. It is one that is anchored in the theft of land, mm-hmm. of the project of extraction and gas and oil and power that continues to fuel our capitalist stock market that is deeply connected to our congresspeople and their family members. So we understand that this is a connected fight, a connected movement, that we're all anchored in it. And yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah. So if people want to join, what is the process like? Is it, do you have to fill out, 10 forms proving you're a tax? I mean, what is it like? Is it easy?
All we're asking right now is that you go to our Linktree, which is linktree.com/taxpayersagainstgenocide. And you can sign up on our JOT form. It is very simple right now. We're just asking for name and email, zip code, and state. And we're also offering, if you want to connect with people in your local area, if you put your zip code, we can connect you with other people in your zip code or in your state so that you can join together and maybe start your own tag. So you can go on all of our social media, Instagram, TikTok, X, YouTube. On TikTok and Blue Sky, we are No Tax for the letter or the number 4 G side, because of course those sites, they like weird names. So,
yeah.
And everywhere else it's Taxpayers Against Genocide. And, we are very, very much excited to have everybody in the United States, every federal taxpayer, to join on and participate with us and hold our representatives accountable.
Yeah.
And also, as far as our folks who are interested in getting involved, we have lots of volunteer opportunities. Yes. We have a volunteer form. We also have so much in the works. We have just announced that we're going to the United Nations Periodic Review in April with the National Lawyers Guild to file a joint report. That is only bolstered by folks who join this movement and sign on and support. And there's no risks to folk doing that. It will be from TAG and the National Lawyers Guild. And so everyone can participate and not worry about any of the sanctions that might be facing some folks who tried to go to the ICC now. Exactly. Under this administration, who is threatening, direct, egregious legal harm against American citizens.
Financial
harm against people who try to take American officials to be held to account.
Anything further that we should know? I perused the drop form site, and there's a way that you can punch in your zip code. It'll tell you who your local representative is. And if they've been identified as someone who has participated in the funding of Israel's genocide in Gaza, and even if that congressperson has, either voted no or abstained, I guess, from certain votes, it's still important that their constituents, be part of this campaign. Can you talk a little bit just finally about that, about even if their congressperson, isn't one of the many implicated, why it's still important as a constituent to sign on?
In some of the counties that are part of this broad 18 counties that make up the court district of Northern California, like Alameda County, Santa Clara, there were some Congress folks that voted to not, right, send the military aid. So Barbara Lee and Ro Khanna, there was a few others. So they weren't named in the lawsuit. But our senators both at the time, Senator Butler and Padilla, both did. So even folks in those counties signed on and they named the senators. So chances are anybody listening to this across or watching it across the country, chances are either your rep in the House or your one of your two senators or both your senators voted to sit. Because when you look at the numbers, it was the vast majority of reps in the House that sent the military aid and the vast majority of senators. So that was part of it.
Yeah. That's important.
And the reality is it's an outlier in the United States government to oppose genocide, even in the smallest form as in a vote. And so I think the elected representatives who have opposed it deserve our thanks and support in so many ways, because they stand often very much alone. And also, as we expand, we are expanding
the folks that we are naming in the international sphere for accountability. And that means we're also including the Biden administration and the Trump administration officials who have participated, supported, and been complicit in this genocide. And so everyone has that in common.
That's right.
Unfortunately. Well,
and
thank you so
much. Our movement, many of us have been doing different types of movement work for a long time, but you've got all these folks, hundreds of people working, and there's not a single paid staff person. We're not a nonprofit. It's just a movement, you know, and it's totally grassroots in the best sense of grassroots, you know. Yeah. It's like they say in Haiti, the lava loss movement, each person's a drop of water, together you become a flood, you know. And we're making these connections to the other struggles in the world. And, you know, we recognize that there's a slow motion genocide that continues to unfold in Haiti due to the U.S. Use of our tax dollars to carry out the coup in 2004 and to maintain a brutal occupation. And so we're focused right now on the genocide in Palestine, but we want to really establish the case of why are our tax dollars being used for empire when people here don't even have health care?
Exactly.
That's right. That's right. We are stronger together always. And once again, tell people how they can get in touch with Taxpayers Against Genocide and get involved.
So you can go to our Linktree, and I misspoke. It's Linktree/Taxpayers Against Genocide on Instagram. It's Taxpayers Against Genocide. You can find us on YouTube and on X and TikTok, Blue Sky, Mastodon, anywhere. It's either Taxpayers Against Genocide or the obscure No Tax for Gside, which is X and Blue Sky. Yeah.
Excellent.
Come join us.
And anybody who just wants to do an old-fashioned email, our email is very simple. It's classactionagainstgenocide@proton.me.
Excellent. And all of those links we'll put into the blog post that will accompany this episode. I want to thank Maria and Hannah Barakat, Mary Sampson, and Seth Donnelly of Taxpayers Against Genocide. Please keep us posted on this campaign, and good luck at the UN. I know we'll have an update after that. So thank you all so much for what you do and for being with us today on the Electronic Intifada podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nora.
Thanks, Nora.
Appreciate your work.